There are still many extensions to build out in the protocol and areas with unsolved scaling issues. In general, the Lightning Protocol itself still has a long way to go in terms of solving existing issues and becoming robust and scalable enough to serve as a global transactional network on top of Bitcoin. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got, I know I said I was hoping to get to Taro today, but as I dug more and more into Taro, some of the specifics seemed less relevant to the discussion of Taro. And I'm still exploring some things. Specifically, I feel like Strike's announcement is really relevant to what I think Taro is going to mean in the future. So I'm going to put that on hold for just a bit. And we're going to come back to that actually in a guy's take, because I've got three topics that I think I want to wrap together. And that will be a really handy place to talk a little bit more in depth about Taro. But what I want to talk about today is actually just a piece I stumbled on Bitcoin Magazine by Shinobi, by Brian Trolls on Twitter. Which is one of my favorite follows. He is one of my favorite Bitcoin contrarians. I mean, he's a Bitcoiner and he's a, I guess you say, a Bitcoin maxi, whatever you want to call that. He's a Bitcoin-only personality, but he's one of the biggest voices for adversarial thinking. Like, I value very highly everyone who is willing to challenge all of the easy, simple narratives of Bitcoin can't be killed and Bitcoin is incorruptible. It's like, well, why? And what are the situations where that could not be true? Because, I mean, that is the thinking that birthed Bitcoin. We can't just pretend that, oh, we're done because a little bit of adversarial thinking created Bitcoin in the first place. No, the reason Bitcoin survives is adversarial thinking. So anyway, Shinobi is one of those people that I follow specifically to keep me grounded, I guess, in that respect. But Shinobi also has a lot of great stuff. He's probably the reason that I took a second look and have been interested in C Lightning and Core Lightning Node more recently. And I've been trying to set it up and I've had a little bit of complications, but I love a lot of the things about how it is designed. And he's got a really great little feature from, what is this, 2 days ago? 3 days ago on Bitcoin Magazine on the different Lightning implementations and kind of what they're doing and where things are headed and all of this stuff. And it was a good piece. It was a really good piece. I immediately was like, oh shit, yeah, this is good stuff on Lightning. So we are going to dig into that right now. We're not going to waste any more time. Except I just want to thank our sponsors, the Bitbox hardware wallet from Shift Crypto, and Swan Bitcoin, swanbitcoin.com/guy. Swan Bitcoin is just the easiest, best, automatic way to stack and withdraw Bitcoin. And Bitbox is where you're going to withdraw it too. That's it. They're great. My favorite hardware wallet and my favorite place to buy Bitcoin. Check them out at guyswan.com/sponsors. And with that, let's get into today's excellent read. And it is titled, How Bitcoin's Leading Lightning Implementations Are Expanding Functionality, by Shinobi. Developers behind leading Lightning network firms, LND, Core Lightning, and LDK, described how they're pushing Layer 2 forward at Bitcoin 2022. The Lightning network can't exactly fork like Bitcoin itself can, but it is starting to branch out. The bare minimum viable product was initially specified in the Bolt documents early on before anything actually went live on the main Bitcoin network, but that was just the starting point. There are still many extensions to build out in the protocol and areas with unsolved scaling issues. In general, the Lightning protocol itself still has a long way to go in terms of solving existing issues and becoming robust and scalable enough to serve as a global transactional network on top of Bitcoin. Part of the rationale for second layer systems as a scaling solution to Bitcoin, aside from the obvious reality that blockchains do not scale, is to make room for easier experimentation. When it comes to second layers like Lightning, there's no need to get everyone to agree to a change in order to try something new. As long as what you are doing works with the base layer functionality supported by Bitcoin, as few as two people can break away and play around with new features without needing to care about everyone else supporting it. Different implementations are starting to take advantage of this greater freedom than the base layer of Bitcoin, and some members of the Core Lightning, or CLN, Lightning Network Daemon, LND, and Lightning Dev Kit, LDK teams, participated in a very interesting panel at Bitcoin 2022 to discuss some of the different priorities each team is taking in terms of expanding the feature set of their Lightning clients. LND. LND is run by Lightning Labs. It is the most widely adopted Lightning implementation on the network, currently the backend of popular wallets like Breeze, Blixt, Zap, and Lightning Labs' own Lightning app before it ceased development on it. It also powers major businesses like BitRefill and HODL. One of the biggest shortcomings of LND has been the massive growth rate of its channel state database, which is being optimized in its next release, but it is still the current pack leader on the network. The Lightning Labs team has generally focused on providing its own monetized services to help address shortcomings inherent to the Lightning protocol as the core of its business model. In terms of the current roadmap in the near term, LND prioritized two different things as the main priority of its development efforts. First is the implementation of Taproot to enable a new transaction structure for channels. Remember, all that a channel is a set of pre-signed transactions, to lay the foundation for future privacy improvements. One of those is the shift away from hash time lock contracts, HTLC, to point time lock contracts, or PTLCs. Currently, HTLCs are what guarantee that a payment either succeeds or fails for every hop along a payment route. The pre-image to the hash lock is released and guarantees the payment goes through for everyone, or it doesn't and is refunded for everyone. PTLCs accomplish the same thing using adapter signatures instead of hashes, which means that every hop along the path does not have the same hash, which could identify a single payment across multiple hops if one person is running multiple nodes along the payment path. While this by no means is a magic privacy solution for the network, it is a building block toward comprehensive privacy once other solutions are implemented. The next step after implementing Taproot channels for Lightning is updating the channels live on the network to use them. There are 82,697 public Lightning channels as of this writing, with close to the most efficient use of block space containing around 3,300 transactions. That would take 25 blocks of just channel closures to close them all out, and another 25 to reopen them as Taproot channels. Let's assume that there are twice as many private channels as there are public ones. This would bring the total to around 150 blocks to close out and reopen all existing Lightning channels as Taproot channels, assuming the blocks are filled with no other transactions. In reality, though, those blocks are not going to be full of just Lightning transactions, so this process could take a week or more for the entire network to cycle through and upgrade. LND is planning to implement a feature called on-the-fly channel updates, where instead of closing existing channels and opening new ones, you simply spend the existing channel state, pre-signed transaction, into a new one, instead of into outputs that would close the channel on the chain. This comes at the cost of an extra transaction for non-cooperative closes, but would allow node operators to take advantage of new Taproot-based features without having to close existing channels. Obviously, the implementation of Taro will likely take a front seat at some point after these developments, but the implementation of a brand new top-layer token protocol will likely take some significant amount of time. Given other features that might be a good idea to implement, as well as the day-to-day work of optimizing the node's existing functionality, I don't think there's any telling how long until that sees the light of day. CLN, or Core Lightning. Formerly, C-Lightning was, despite much reporting to the contrary at the time, the first Lightning implementation to go live on mainnet in 2018. The entire architecture of CLN was built around the idea of modularity, so that different pieces of the node, such as the piece handling keys and signing, could be easily swapped out and customized. There is even a plugin system designed for users to be able to write their own customized behavior to interface with CLN and alter how the node operates in certain situations, or in response to specific events. A prime example of this is the payment functionality, which is even implemented as a plugin for the default payment behavior shipped with CLN. This is the part of the node that handles figuring out payment routes and sending them. There are a large catalog of plugins available, from automated node management with CLBoss, watchtower plugins, and automated probing logic, to dynamic pruning of Bitcoin Core to ensure CLN always has the blocks it needs to stay synced. A large list of plugins can be found here. The core goal of CLN has always been modularity and flexibility, and the team is planning on taking this to the next level with its Greenlight software stack. Greenlight will further separate the functionality of different parts of the node to the point that users will be able to store and manage their keys and signing operations on different and even multiple devices from where the actual node backend handling channels and other data can run somewhere else, either in the cloud or even a device hosted at home. Breeze Wallet is even planning to shift to using CLN and Greenlight and break up the different functions of its wallet into separate applications to take advantage of the freedom enabled by this architecture. Separate apps for podcast streaming, general wallet use, point-of-sale systems, all connected to the same node. This even opens the door for receiving payments when your mobile wallet is offline, a major issue in many use cases with Lightning. A separate signing device could be left at home online all the time and programmed to only sign channel updates when they are increasing your channel balance. Problem solved. You no longer have to worry about having your phone open all the time in order to receive funds. CLN's next priority is going to be building on the work of Nifty Nye on dual-funded channels. Currently, when opening a Lightning channel, only one side of the channel provides a funding UTXO, leaving all of the liquidity in the channel on that party's side. CLN currently supports dual funding, where both sides of the channel can contribute UTXOs in the funding transaction, allowing the channel to start off in a balanced state where both sides have funds. Building on this functionality, it is currently working on implementing splicing, a long-discussed feature for the protocol. Splicing would allow you to open and close a channel in a single transaction to add more funds or remove some, but not all of the funds in the channel. This would be a huge win for channel liquidity. Imagine opening a channel with someone so they can receive funds and realizing you allocated 10 times the amount they needed. Splicing would allow you to remove the excess without disrupting your peers' ability to receive funds and allocate your Bitcoin somewhere more productive. This is a huge win for both average users, Lightning service providers, and routing nodes. It would enable all of them to utilize their liquidity more efficiently without shutting down the channel for the other party. LDK. Lightning DevKit is not so much a Lightning node implementation, and more of a library that can be used to construct a Lightning node. It provides code for every isolated piece of a Lightning node, the routing logic, the channel management, the logic for monitoring the state of the blockchain to verify whether channels are open, the whole shebang. Blue Wallet is working on an LDK-based implementation, and a brand new Lightning implementation, Sensei, is also being built out around LDK. Cash App even built a node entirely from scratch. When it began looking at Lightning integration, it wanted to deeply integrate the behavior of its Lightning nodes with the back end handling Cash App's user balances. No existing implementation would allow for easy integration to that degree, so they customized their own using LDK. The LDK team is taking on a much different endeavor compared to other Lightning implementations. As noted earlier, it isn't really an implementation, but rather a toolkit that can be used to build one yourself with the customized behavior you want. As such, it isn't really prioritizing any specific feature sets over any others. LDK's goal is to widely support all standard functionality of the Lightning protocol and allow builders to make use of any standardized features in whatever way they choose to in their own applications or not. The road ahead. A large part of the pitch for Lightning was facilitating native payments on the internet for digital services. But the user experience of that goal has not really materialized in a slick and easy way. Work has been done by L&D, Core Lightning, and LDK to address this issue. WebAssembly is a new language and binary format to facilitate more efficient and lightweight programs to run in the web browser. LDK has a WebAssembly binary for their node. L&D has a WebAssembly application for remotely accessing L&D's RPC. And Core Lightning is planning on implementing key management tools to run in WebAssembly that can connect to a Lightning node remotely. While there are security issues to consider when managing keys in a web browser, the days of seamless Lightning integration on the web are approaching. Lightning, as a protocol and network, still has a long road ahead in terms of solving open problems and figuring out how to craft applications that are easy and intuitive for end users. But work is moving forward. It will undoubtedly get messier as different teams diverge and focus on solving different problems and extending functionality in different directions. But progress is undoubtedly happening. We can only hope that things don't diverge to the point of fragmenting the network and software compatibility. The road ahead will be very interesting indeed. This is a guest post by Shinobi. Opinions expressed are entirely their own and do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. Okay, that concludes Shinobi's piece in kind of summing up what's been going on with the different Lightning implementations and what was discussed at Bitcoin 2022. In fact, I will actually have the link to a couple of different videos that I've been slowly catching up with all the chats or all the panels and discussions and stuff with Bitcoin 2022. I'll post a couple of my favorites that I've listened to so far in the notes. But that one was titled, How Bitcoin's Leading Lightning Implementations Are Expanding Functionality. And there's a number of really good points that Shinobi brings up in this, and I wanted to kind of expand on how I see it, and then also how I kind of relate to it as I'm trying to explore Core Lightning now, or see Lightning, since I've been previously all L&D in everything that I have run up to this point, and that's kind of been the general use of all the major tools have been L&D dependent. So let's thank our sponsor really quick, and we'll jump back in with a discussion on this piece. So, you know how on a plane they have that black box that's designed to survive even if the plane plummets to the earth and explodes in a ball of fire, killing everybody on board? Well, that's kind of like what the BitBox is for your Bitcoin keys. It's a hardware and software vault that keeps your keys safe even if your MacBook explodes with fiery internet herpes, or a Trojan horse attack, or if your mobile phone gets compromised by hackers. The BitBox is there to black box your Bitcoin keys even when your phone or laptop go down in hacker flames. It makes sure that your dirty, nasty internet-connected device can't break into your Bitcoin vault. The BitBox O2, a simple, easy-to-use hardware wallet is one of the best investments you can make for the best protection against an attacker or a compromised device. And you can get 5% off with code GUY, G-U-Y, spelled just like the word. How easy is that? It gets you 5% off everything in your cart, and you go to guyswan.com/bitbox. It'll take you right there. Again, that is code GUY at guyswan.com/bitbox. All right, so let's talk about the Lightning implementations and Shinobi's article here, and kind of the things that kind of kicked into my thinking as I was reading through this piece, and what kind of made me want to do an episode on it as well. So right towards the beginning, he just kind of makes a statement that I think is fairly true. He says, quote, "In general, the Lightning protocol itself still has a long way to go in terms of solving existing issues and becoming robust and scalable enough to serve as a global transactional network on top of Bitcoin." And this really is true. There is still a lot of work to do, but it's amazing how much has been worked through to make the front end, to make the user experience that much better in the last year, really, more specifically, maybe year and a half, when the LSP model really kind of kicked off. Because I think that's been a huge gap that was bridged by certain services and wallets in the space. You know, when Moon Wallet, that's M-U-U-N, when Phoenix, which is run by the Async guys, and then Breeze as well, which are the ones that I, pretty much my go-to for the ones that I recommend people as non-custodial wallets. And there's a couple new ones recently, but I don't play with them often enough just because those are still kind of my main ones. They all essentially have the LSP model where you're opening channels with a specific entity. In the case of Phoenix, it's Async. With the case of Breeze, it's Breeze. And with Moon, it's, I think they have like a specific name for it, but it's the Moon service, basically. So what they're doing is they're managing liquidity and channels on their end to make sure that you always have a route, that your node, they open liquidity with you to help you on the front, to immediately be able to receive and to send from your wallet. And you don't really know why. All your job is, or you don't really know what they're doing or why. Like, it's just they handle it so that the wallet works for you, and all your whole job is to keep your keys safe, right? Is to just keep your wallet backed up, keep your keys safe, and then you can restore it on any phone, and you have a cash wallet. You have cash Bitcoin. That's how I think of Lightning. But even with that, there is still a barrier. Like, even when I'm like talking to other people, the fact that Bitcoin and Lightning are not ubiquitously the same, like they are not explicitly treated as universal, as indistinguishable from each other, which I think is where it has to be. Some people, I think it's Bree, I can't remember exactly. I haven't quote unquote deposited Bitcoin into these wallets in quite a while because I've just been kind of doing the side where if I receive a big enough payment, they automatically open a channel with me. So I haven't like sent it to a Bitcoin address in these wallets in a while. But basically, the general methodology is that the Bitcoin address is still separate from Lightning. And for the average user, that needs to disappear. Lightning and Bitcoin do not need to be separate. It needs to be one protocol that is operating such that you can receive money in the cheapest way possible. And that's something that I think, more specifically, the fundamental tools of the protocol, and it's not that the capability isn't there, it's literally that it just hasn't been implemented properly. That it hasn't been built out fully. And there's so many little features and little things to implement to make certain aspects of what is already there work more properly or work more responsively and in the way and for the use case that the user wants to tackle, that it's essentially kind of been on the back burner, or not really that it's been on the back burner. That's not really true. It's more that there's just been such a broad area of things to attack that some of the more fundamental things still just haven't happened. And they're also the more mission critical, so they require the most testing. They require the most, you know, the most robust review and security in order to make sure that, you know, they're not the things that, you know, somebody updates and makes a incorrect signature and they're just, all their Bitcoin are gone for, you know, just forever. You can't have that shit showing up in Lightning all the time. That would be way worse than not having exactly the feature you were looking for. And this is also something actually that he kind of touches on because of that, like, as he says, like, they've been kind of branching. The different implementations have been going in different directions and focusing on different things. And this is kind of like, and I think Ryan Gentry actually talked about this in one of the talks that I listened to from Bitcoin 2022, was that, you know, L&D, it's not that they aren't against Bolt 12. It's that the major problems that they've seen from Lightning Labs when talking to developers, when talking to wallet builders and service providers and all of these things, the major problem they've had is onboarding U.S. dollars, is getting that bridge between Bitcoin and dollars, or more specifically, Bitcoin and the user's current world. So because of that, you know, you have limited time, you have limited capital. You can't just, you know, direct people to go implement Bolt 12 and get that to work if that doesn't seem to be the major problem. You know, you attack the most asked for or argued about problem first, and then you move on from there. And like, you know, like Shinobi says, there's still a lot of problems. There's still, I mean, we're still at the beginning of this thing. It's kind of crazy to think about, but we are. We're kind of in the zone. When you look at the internet, the analogy I kind of use to think about it is that, and this is also one of the major reasons why I think altcoins and shitcoins have just kind of exploded, is because it's the naive solution to all of these problems that doesn't actually scale and isn't actually robust enough in the long term. But in the short term, it'll get you the appearance of accomplishing that feature or accomplishing that goal or service very quickly, in the same way that Bitcoin solved microtransactions back in 2012 for something like Satoshi Dice, is that you could do tens of thousands of 1 cent transaction when nobody else was doing any transactions. So shitcoins basically exploded in the naivety of like, oh, we're going to design an entirely new blockchain that's just around this. And even though it doesn't scale, while for the first 4 years, while it has almost no users or not enough users and no implementation, and it's immature and it's not being, you know, it's not got tons of different services, it'll look like it works. It'll look like it works and we can sell this token to people. But the real problem is you can't Band-Aid this problem. You have to have a robust system. And if you don't build it out in that way from the get-go, if you don't take the time and engineer every single piece incrementally, well, then the thing's just going to come to a point where you're relying on it in a slightly too centralized or maybe just completely centralized way, and then it either collapses or it just fails to give what the whole purpose of Bitcoin is. You ruin censorship resistance, you ruin the non-custodial nature, you know, whatever it is. You can't half-ass these things. Like, it either is or it isn't. And in this situation, Lightning has a lot of different challenges because of the kind of always online aspect of it, of, well, just because it's a layer two. But the beauty of it is that we're kind of in this phase where services are being built around the features and the aspects of it that aren't quite there. Like, autopilot isn't quite there. Splicing is still difficult. Well, splicing actually isn't really implemented. But managing channels and rebalancing in these things is not super easy. And the user themselves are never going to know how to do this, like, to a certain degree, at least. You know, there might be like kind of a general literacy that kind of grows over the next decade or something as it becomes just kind of part of society. But it'll still always probably kind of be like, you know, the IT guy is the only one who knows how to change permissions on a file, right? It'll be the quote-unquote IT people who know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to channel management or rebalancing. And you'll want the product or the wallet, the implementation itself, to work regardless of knowing one way or the other. But right now, it makes sense that businesses are the ones bridging the gaps, because they're the ones that are willing to and or have the capacity to take the investment to learn, to you know, learn how to use the terminal, to figure out how to do the tweaks and build themselves a custom feature or whatever, they essentially have the capital and time investment available to them because they're building a service around it to make it easy for somebody else. But the beauty of the protocol is kind of the way that a lot of this stuff can be broken down and isolated. And that's actually what I wanted to get into with Core Lightning here in just a second. But he brings up an interesting point that, you know, the internet, or back to the analogy I was thinking, is that, like, the internet, as it developed out, you started to see a bunch of gaps being bridged by businesses that would simply take care of a task for you. And I think we're still in that phase for Lightning until it gets automated away into the hardware and the software of the device itself. But this is where just kind of the nature of the Layer 2 and the real selling point of Layer 2 becomes so obvious, or becomes self-evident, is that you don't have to ask any centralized entity, or you don't have to have any consensus around the changes, around the feature set that you're trying to build out. There's a quote that says, as long as what you are doing, this is from Shinobi, by the way, as long as what you are doing works with the base layer functionality supported by Bitcoin, as few as two people can break away and play around with new features without needing to care about everyone else supporting it. And this was the beauty of the internet in general, of communication becoming a protocol, is when the internet was born, you know, prior to the internet, our major communications network was the AT&T network, it was the phone network. If I wanted to, as an end user, if I had the idea of implementing voicemail on the AT&T network, I couldn't just implement it. I had to call up AT&T. If I wanted a feature added to the core AT&T network that anybody could use from the phone that they already had, I have to call up AT&T and I have to be like, don't you want to implement this nationwide and test this out and see if people are using it? And the degree of investment and testing and implementation to actually make that happen, it's all entirely permissioned and it's all massive. The cost is astronomical to even get it on the network because the infrastructure is essentially, you know, across the nation. But when the infrastructure is no longer smart, when the infrastructure becomes dumb and the user device becomes smart, you push the innovation to the edges. Just, you know, Andreas talks about this a lot in some of the old videos that I love of his. But when you push the innovation to the edges and you make the network a dumb network, which we've read that on the show, actually, I think, why dumb networks are better. But you make the network itself dumb to the type of packet that it's routing, and you just make it work for making the communication happen, and then you can put intelligence at the edges. Well, then I can spin up a website, and I can create any feature. I can build a social media by myself in, you know, my college dorm room. I can invent a new way of looking at this information, or sharing this information, or spreading this information, or you know, redirecting some other service or packet to wherever the hell I want on my end, and I can have one other person test it with me. I can service three customers and just see if they like it, if it becomes something that they actually use. And that's the promise, that's the value of a layer two scaling solution, is that it frees up all of the feature space. And it allows us to branch out. And I think we're kind of in this space. And I think it might have been Gentry who said this. Or maybe it was, I'm not going to remember. I don't think it was Gentry. But somebody said this in one of the videos I talked. I'll see if I can find it. And I'll post this video as well. But they were basically saying that people were on this panel were basically complaining about the process of innovation and how standards are very difficult to establish, and there's lots of different conflicting development, and things are branching out in different ways, et cetera, et cetera. And whoever this was, maybe it was Gentry, was basically saying that I think it actually kind of works. And maybe this is just kind of the philosophical side of me that just kind of loves the throw darts at everything and see what sticks. But I kind of tend to agree as well, because you know, it necessarily, if it's actually decentralized, if it's actually expanding in a sort of, in a more free market way, it's going to seem uncoordinated. It's going to seem like we just have this hodgepodge of stuff where we don't exactly know the direction. And I think that's more inclined to show that there is no control over the direction, that we're slowly and arduously working our way through to find essentially the best solution through the implementation itself, through people actually using the tools. And like, for instance, like Core Lightning is such a great, has really been kind of a cool design in the sense of like how modular and how the plugins work and all of this stuff. And I really hope to see a lot more things move over to Core Lightning, just so we can kind of compare the benefits of LND versus Core Lightning more often. Or maybe more often really isn't the word, like more directly, where we have a subset of the network that has really taken advantage of what is unique about both of these implementations. Because I think LND really just kind of won in the implement quickly and get tooling on top of it. But it wasn't, obviously it wasn't complete. No implementation was complete in that way. But it was essentially the quickest to the finish line, so to speak. And Sea Lightning took a little bit longer. Like even now, like I've had to install a plugin for dealing with a light node. And I actually haven't gotten it to quite run perfectly yet because I'm doing like a 10 gigabyte prune. So the Sea Lightning was already trying to request a block from my node. It wasn't there because obviously I had been pruning it. So I've run into a little bit of a roadblock specifically because of the modularity rather than it helping me by, you know, having all of that, the easy get to the finish line sort of functionality right out the gate. But I know that after I kind of, I'm going to actually dig through, I'm glad he left the link for all of the plugins because I realize I haven't really explored all of the plugins for Core Lightning. So I intend to, I think I'm going to just like kind of take a little bit tonight and go through and just kind of read through all of these things and see which one's going to, you know, kind of do the trick that I'm looking for. Or maybe I'll find out some other method or entirely, or I'll just link to a different node or something. I don't know. I haven't totally sorted it out yet, but I'm just trying to figure out the best way to implement and get this thing running. But anyway, I think we're in this space, or I think we're going through another expansive zone of all of this where everything's going to diverge. And hopefully, like Shinobi said, hopefully not to the point of incompatibility, and I don't think so. I think it's kind of a crucial part of, if you're incompatible, well then you've basically failed with your feature. You've failed with everything that you're doing because you've necessarily made, it doesn't matter how great the feature is, if it becomes incompatible and the network itself forks, well then you're no longer part of the network. It's like, you know, having a feature on a website that doesn't let you connect to Google and social media and stuff is like, oh, well, then you're just not even on the internet. So I'm not really worried about that level of branching, so to speak. But nonetheless, I think we will see a big or a larger divergence in all of these things and the expansion of all sorts of different features and optionality. And I like to see that. I think that's important because there are a few things right now that seem far, far easier for Core Lightning. After you get that, you know, base set up, that I think is going to be really, really useful with just a couple of plugins that I hope to just kind of get to expand and play around with. So, maybe I'll have some announcement or something to share on that front after I kind of get this thing running. I've been kind of working on it for about 30 or 40 minutes every night. But it's cool, or it interests me that, and this is another thing that he actually points out in this, is that Core Lightning is, and I haven't watched anything with Breeze yet, so I'm not sure if this was specifically mentioned at the Bitcoin 2022 conference, but I'll probably stumble upon it if it does. But it says, separate apps for, well, going back, this is the quote from Shinobi in the article talking about Breeze Wallet and breaking down using Core Lightning and Greenlight. And just for those who don't know, Greenlight is Blockstream service to run the node on the back end, but separate the keys to the front end. Like he kind of loosely explained that, but that's kind of the purpose of Greenlight. But it says separate apps for podcast streaming, general wallet use, point of sale systems, but all connected to the same node. This even opens the door for receiving payments when your mobile wallet is offline, a major issue in many use cases with Lightning. A separate signing device could be left at home online all the time and programmed to only sign channel updates when they are increasing your channel balance. Problem solved. You no longer have to worry about having your phone open all the time in order to receive funds. Now, this is something that I really think, and this is something that I talked with quite a bit with Paul Itui, and this is also something that Tim, or Bootstrap Bandit talks about like a lot with Ellen Pay, is separating out specific authentication for different wallets and for different services and all these things for an API where only a certain thing can happen. Far more kind of exclusive or granulated control and keys, subkeys to certain aspects or certain features where you can program the level of control and where you can essentially have certain access for certain pieces of software that only allow, you know, some sort of partial access to protect yourself, but also to get added features. Like you said, here is a signing device at home that's always online so that your mobile device can receive even when your wallet is closed. Because a lot of people have had that problem where you find out, somebody can't receive a payment because they literally just close their wallet after they send off the invoice. Your device has to be online and active on your mobile in order to sign the update. Therefore, it just basically runs into dead space, basically. But that's just something, it's just really cool. I think that's going to be a core part of making this work far more efficiently and more specifically to let me run like a routing node that I can access from, you know, a route. Routing somebody else's payment through your node is doing exactly that. It's a channel update that only increases my channel balance. I take a fee of 1 sat or 10 sats or whatever it is through whatever channels are being routed through. And then we close. So the overall balance increases. And then this and other, it's funny how many of these things have been promises of Lightning, but we just haven't had the tools. You know, PTLC is another great example of actually separating the hashes, making them adapter signatures, as they were said. Adapter signatures such that each individual payment at each step in the process actually has a different lock, so that it's not obvious or there's no explicit connection between one hop in the payment and another hop in the payment. Right now, the HTLCs, if you just check the pre-image, it's the HTLC is the same. The hash that the payment is locked up in or locked up with is the same across the entire route from beginning to end. And PTLCs will make it so that each lock is unique at each individual step, so there won't be any obvious connection. You know, if a whole bunch of people are streaming sats at 100 sats a minute or whatever it is, you can technically, in a sense, if you've got like a bunch of nodes in the route, you can use the HTLCs to say, oh, well, this one's explicitly this 100 sats from this direction or from this node, and this one is a separate one. But in the case of PTLCs, all 100 sat payments look exactly the same because they're all just 100 sat payments. Now, payments specifically aren't really the major privacy concern on Lightning, as we went over in the problems of Lightning privacy, you know, just a few episodes back. But nonetheless, you don't want to leave an avenue open when there's an easy fix. And there's actually a lot of other cool tricks that you can do with PTLCs that will be enabled, features and other simplified things with Lightning as we kind of move into the zone of, and I think we're almost there, into the zone that I was talking about earlier where Bitcoin and Lightning are ubiquitous or indistinguishable. Like, you simply send Bitcoin to a thing and it sorts out Lightning. And I think the Lightning side of stuff, and I think splicing is going to be a major, major part of that. Aggregation from an LSP's perspective and the use of Taproot, I think, is going to be a major, major part of that. But again, These aren't there yet. They're not actually there. What we've essentially done is hacked these things together and built services around the limitations so far to make the network work. But I think that's why it's majorly, it's heavily dominated by businesses and LSPs, which I suspect LSPs are actually still going to be the dominant model. I might be wrong, I don't know, but it seems intuitive that that would be the case. But I don't know, we'll see. So many things are changing and there's so much new coming to the protocol within the next year or two. And there's also a lot more development activity. You know, LDK and Cash App and Block and all of these things that are happening now, all of that development that's happening is relatively new. It's really kind of amazing to see a whole nother group of developers with the explicit goal of making this easy for developers, for builders, for businesses to simplify and create new Lightning implementations, to create custom implementations and things that are oriented explicitly for one business as opposed to another, rather than an implementation that would serve this whole corner of an industry or something. And I think that's where, I think that's a lot of the reason why when you have something like LDK and people are focused on allowing simple building, and I also think the modularity of Core Lightning, and to see that gain more attention, which I hope is happening, I hope we'll branch out there as well. I think that's a big reason why I think we're going to see a lot of divergence, because we're just going to see people who are finally seeing that Lightning has the liquidity to do so much that wasn't possible before. Lightning is finally going to start being plugged into web browsers in a far more simple way. And hopefully these things are going to get easy for the builders and the tinkerers to really create the things, to solve the problems and create the things that they want to see created, because it's in people solving their own problems where all the beautiful things are built, I feel like, is when you go out and you're like, oh, I have this problem on Lightning, or I want to build this thing because it would just be great if I had it. I really think that's where the greatest things are built. And that's kind of the beauty of open source, you know, like that's how open source comes about, is that you're trying to build the solution to your problem. And that's your motivation to build it, because you're solving your own problem. And then you open source it and you put it out there, and it turns out, holy shit, there's a million other people who have this problem. And suddenly you have an ecosystem. Suddenly you have a community and you have everyone realizing how this thing can be improved and applying it to their problem, et cetera, et cetera. And that's kind of where, that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about Lightning. We've seen another like doubling in capacity and capacity and uses, like volume of payments and stuff through it. I'm already reading through. Arcane Research already has a new State of the Lightning paper, which I am reading through. Hopefully I'll have that one on the show as well. But this was just a really good episode, or a really good article by Shinobi and Bitcoin Magazine. Bitcoin Magazine has had some amazing stuff recently, and obviously the conference was just phenomenal. And a thank you to Shinobi for always being the voice of sit down, shut up, we have problems, let's focus on them. Adversarial thinking is very badly needed. I think we're reaching a point where we have too many quote-unquote followers, too many people who got to Bitcoin and just, you know, repeat all of the best taglines. And so the people keeping the adversarial spirit alive and challenging all of the tools and recognizing where there were faults, and, you know, not just pie in the sky discussions about what it's all going to be, but what we need to get there, I think, are really the most valuable voices in the space. Or at least for me right now, that's kind of where I am. I really appreciate that. I just do. Thanks to Shinobi, a big thanks to Bitcoin Magazine and this article, and for Bitcoin 2022, so I can stay up, and I have just hours and hours and hours of content to read and watch to stay up on all this. And I hopefully will be able to translate it and share it with you guys in a more simple, easier to consume format. That is the purpose of this show, to learn and explore Bitcoin. This is Bitcoin Audible, and it is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin and the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. That is from Shift Crypto. You can check them out at shiftcrypto.ch. You can go to guyswan.com/bitbox. It'll take you right there. And you can buy your Bitcoin at swanbitcoin.com/guy. I love you all. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to follow Shinobi at Brian Trolls, Trolls with a Z. I'll have the link in the show notes. Don't forget to follow Bitcoin Magazine. Don't forget to follow me at The Guy Swan on Twitter. So much more to come. I hope to be in front of the mic every single day to bring you tons of new stuff this week and next week to finally get rid of my backlog. Thank you so much for listening. I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, take it easy, guys. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.